Welcome to Bimmercast number 42. It is Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. Tonight we're going to be talking about the new BMW four-cylinder engine, the twin-power four-cylinder engine that was just released in the xDrive 28i. We're going to be talking about how that engine is going to proliferate the entire BMW lineup, sans a couple of vehicles. We're going to be recapping a lot of the 1M stories we've had recently, talking about the ordering process, talking about our first-hand experiences with the car. Of course, recapping the 6 Series convertible, which we saw in Detroit, and a few other surprises. Stay tuned. Okay, we are back. Michael, it's been a few weeks till you and I were actually on a show. How's it going?
Oh, it's going. You know, after digging out of 30 inches of white shit, life has gotten back to sort of being normal.
Can we say that word on the podcast?
I apologize. It's just, I hate that stuff right now, man.
No, I'm joking. We have done that in the past. No worries whatsoever. That white shit will make you do that. One thing that I've got to say, speaking of snow, my drive back from Detroit to Chicago last Tuesday was unbelievable. It's a 4-hour drive typically. It was 7.5 hours of lots of oh shits. I mean, it was pretty wild. I drove back in this year. Actually, drove. We didn't have our 5 Series loaner like we did last year, so this year we had actually my ZHP shod with Michelin snow tires, and oh my god, it was. I will say this: it was fascinating. Snow the entire way, including whiteout conditions, of course, near Lake Michigan, where the lake effect snow hits, and. I'm happy to say that we were one of the fastest vehicles on the road, but that means anywhere from 30 to 45 miles an hour on a 70-mile-an-hour highway.
Wow, that's great conditions.
For 7.5 hours.
See, I would have stopped at the local watering hole, became intoxicated, and got a hotel room next door.
Well, I actually had to make dinner plans that night in Chicago, which I might add I did.
Oh, fantastic.
So it was quite a trip. But it was also quite a show. And, you know, we talked about it in the interviews in the past week or so. We interviewed Dr. Kai Segler, of course, and Matthew Russell, head of BMW M and Alpina brands in the U.S. And we had a lot to talk about. We had a lot of answers in those interviews, but we got a lot of answers sort of off the record as well. We walked the show. We saw a lot of things, and it was just a fantastic show to be at. Of course, the big highlight for a lot of people is the 918 RSR Porsche, which is a hybrid race car, V8 powered hybrid race car, which is if not anything but interesting. Beyond that, there were a couple notable things. The new VW Passat looks insanely bland and looks quite cheap. They've cheapened it by, I think, $6,000, and I would say about $4,000 of that shows. It's an affront to anybody who's a VW fan, and I'm not a VW fan, and I'm still slightly offended. It's really sad to see a great German marquee chase to, you know, sort of the lowest common denominator, which is the U.S. market. And I mean, essentially it's a German Camry at this point.
Yeah.
So shame. Yeah, it was a real shame. I mean, you know, I didn't love the previous Passat, but I had some respect for it. The previous ones I had more respect for. You know, VW, love it or hate it, you know, they have a long history of good engineering typically good engineering. And it's very clear that they're engineering now to meet a price point and nothing really much more than that. So it's a shame. But other than that, Hyundai was impressive, very impressive with their new concept car, and I am going to name that concept car in a second. Oh, it's the Veloster, which is a terrible name, but it's actually a three-door, as in a long door. It's like the old what was that AMC that had the long door on the driver's side and the short door on the passenger side, or maybe it was the other way around. Anyway, it's got a long door on one side, and it's got two short doors on the other. So it gives you access to the back pretty easily. But it's a pretty interesting car, though, nonetheless. And they had another interesting concept as well. Mercedes, of course, was there with God knows what, some new something class. Audi, new A6. Got to say, it looked fantastic in person. Really impressive. Other BMW competitors out there. you know what? I can't think of a single thing that sort of a BMW competitor that really took I took interest in.
That's the everything is becoming vanilla again in the auto industry.
Perhaps
Everything looks the same, but the grills and the lights.
I'll have to turn to Porsche again. The Cayman R looked pretty good. Don't think the paint job is really to my liking, but it looks pretty good. The SLS Mercedes looks, and I've seen it in person. I've sat in it. I've looked at it quite a bit over the past couple of years. The more I see that car, the more I like it. I started out just flat out hating it, and I have to say it has a presence that few cars have these days. You think about, you're just talking about the blandness of so many cars. That is a car that will, I think, stand the test of time a little bit better than most. Speaking of standing the test of time, the new 6 Series was introduced, the 650i convertible.
Yay!
At the show. And, you know, it's a car that in some photos and at some angles tends to look very long and flat. But in person with, you know, of course, the larger wheels on it and top down, top up, doesn't really matter. It has quite a presence. It is a pretty taut car. You know, the lines are crisp. I wouldn't call it beautiful. I'd call it purposeful.
Yeah, it's a purposeful GT, and I think, you know, I got some flack for describing it as Aston Martin light. You know, it's almost entering that class of cars. And, you know, rumors are floating that maybe it's a bond car, this new 6 Series. So we'll see.
Really?
Oh, you didn't hear it from me.
Well, okay. Maybe not. One car that really shocked me, the Z4 35iS. You know, we know that's a great car. The new yellow interior, unbelievable.
Really? I find that hard to believe.
Truth be told, I was in the same boat as you, but I got into that thing and was completely blown away. The seats feel fantastic. It's this mixture of Alcantara and leather. The dashboard's Alcantara. There's yellow Alcantara on the doors, for God's sake. And it's not this bright yellow. It's like this deep mustard yellow. It just looks interesting. It's a kind of color, it's a kind of combination that I would own, and it would help define that car as funky and interesting.
Interesting.
Elsewhere on the BMW stand, of course, the new 1 Series debuted. 128i looks as sort of sleepy as always, and it's non-M Sport fascia. You know, just that car just needs a harder edge. And, of course, the 135 gives it that. I do think the 135, you know, sitting next to that 1M looks a little more laid back than it used to. If you look around in some of the photos we have on Bimmerfile, you'll see that. The 1M looked just in person utterly fantastic, and Yeah, as anybody who listens to the show knows, we've been talking about this car for a long time, and we'll talk about it in just a little bit. But it was as advertised in person.
Great to hear.
I'll say that. Elsewhere, the new X3, of course, has been out for a little while. Looks good. BMW had a good lineup there. No question about it. No M3s. So... interesting to note that. Moving over to the mini booth, the new Paceman looks good. I know a lot of people on Motor and Fowl have been talking smack about it. I kind of like it. I kind of
think it's a great idea too.
I kind of like the car like I like the X6, and I cannot believe I'm saying that because I used to be such an X6 hater, but it just looks good. It's sleek. It's for somebody who just really only needs two doors and, you know, 2+2, but wants something a little larger than the standard mini hatch. So, yeah, good show. Really good show this year. Had a chance to catch up with a lot of folks from BMW. Had a chance to talk to a lot of folks. One thing that I've always taken away from this event, and it's one of those, and this is, you know, let's be honest, the fact that we get to do this, it's a bit of a dream. You know, we love these cars, but we try to be critical of them. And I think it's great that BMW respects us for being critical and having opinions. And they invite us out and they want to hear from us and they want to talk to us. And they're always so gracious. And, you know, it's fantastic to have an opportunity to sit down and chat with designers and engineers and people up and down the ladder and have them actually listen to you. So it was a good show for a lot of reasons. And and I'll end with saying that for all those who want to ask BMW executives, why are there no wagons? I've asked that question so many times that they just laugh now.
Yes, they do. And quite frankly, we are quite opinionated and they listen still sometimes.
Well, it's great. And you heard Matt Russell actually talk about the fact that, you know, this site and a lot of our conversations on this podcast have led to them reevaluating some of the options on the 1M. I can't think of a better example of the kind of input that we've had. And of course, there's other sites out there and there's other places that they get that input. But it was great for him to mention that and call it out. And I think it's less of a testament to us. It's more of a testament to the readers and the people who have comments in on Bimmer File, really, and even on the podcast itself. You know, I think it's all of you guys collectively that have created something that makes them stand up and take note. So,
absolutely, if you shoot us an email and you have a question, we try our damnedest to get that answer or to let your opinion be heard.
You know, I think of, and it's interesting too, because I mean, I've been a BMW fan since I was a little kid, and I think of all these great cars and all the little nuances of the ordering process and the options and things like that. And I think about, God, how awesome would it have been to have some input on like the E30 M3's options, you know, like that's really cool. And for 10, 15 years' time, for some people who maybe have commented in Bimmer File and gave us the idea to talk about these options, or basically gave us the idea to try to influence something and then actually have it influence something on this 1M. I think the people who've left those comments, the people who have helped us, should feel pretty excited about that.
Couldn't agree more.
So moving on from Detroit, I think we want to talk about the 1M a little bit, because there's a few things that we learned in Detroit about the car. And Michael, you know, you and I have talked about this since. The biggest thing that we learned, not really learned but confirmed, is the engine. It is the Z435 IS engine, just full stop. And I think when we asked that question to Matthew Russell, you know, he said what M did is they took a look at that engine. They took a look at every facet of it and they ran it through all of its tests. They ran it through all the normal things that they would an M engine. And it seemed pretty clear what he was saying is it passed those tests, and it passed those tests without modification. So that means that the mechanicals of the 1M engine are the same as the Z435 IS engine. Again, full stop. That is what we heard at the auto show. Now, the Z435 IS may have some updates to it, or may have had some updates to it over the past year. They may be minor, they may be very, very small, and we would expect the 1M to get those updates. So it may be slightly different, as all BMW engines are, slightly different than the very first production month that came out. But I think the fact remains, according to, again, BMW North America, if you were to order an M1 and receive it with March production, and you got a March production Z435 IS, you would have the same mechanical, the same engine mechanically, essentially.
Yes.
What is different, and from there on out, let's be very clear, everything is pretty much different between the two cars. The one thing that is different, and it's one thing that should not be overlooked, or you know, really downplayed, is the software of the 1M. And this is something that he talked about, that I heard Dr. Kai Segler talk about quite a bit when we had a conversation after the podcast. The software in the car has given the car a character that is even more aggressive than the Z435 IS. And Michael, I think you know as well as I do, that is a very aggressive little car.
It's extremely aggressive. That's kind of eye-opening to me. I'm just sitting here like, wow, because that means the 1M is going to be like super monster.
Well, I mean, you think about it, it's kind of manual transmission, so immediately it has a little bit more of a sinister vibe to it. You can play with it, you can rev it up, you can play with the downshifts, match revs in a way that gives you a little bit more pop on overrun. It's just gonna be a little monster. That's just what it's gonna be. The other thing that we found out, transmission, same as the 135i. So that was a surprise. We've heard a couple of different things. So it's gonna be the same. The clutch is the same on a 335IS.
Which makes sense, because that's the upgraded pressure plate and clutch disc and all that good stuff.
So we've got upgraded flywheel from the Z435 IS. We've got upgraded clutch. Now, one thing a question I have for you, Michael, and for the life of me, I can't remember this, is the Z435 IS engine, how different is that from the 335 IS engine?
It has more power, more horsepower, and more torque.
But mechanically, is it different?
I don't believe it's necessarily mechanically. It has a lot more cooling to it. Mm-hmm. And it also has a different software.
There you go. So a couple other things. One thing that I think it was Dr. Kai Segler mentioned, the entire subframe of the 1M is taken lock stock from the M3. So when you buy a 1M, you are buying, for all intents and purposes, a shortened M3 from sort of the wheels down. And that's kind of cool, really.
Yeah, it's really cool because it's going to have the thrust plates and beefed up sway bars and all that stuff. So that's really fantastic.
So you've got everything basically beefed out to the max. It's easy to look at this car as an E30 or E46 successor, but the more we look at it on paper, it's pretty close to an E90, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure the performance really, if they let that motor go, would be pretty close to an E90 in many ways. But, you just don't have the soundtrack and that wonderful high rev line. But
yeah, that's true.
Aside from that, it's a smaller package. I mean, realistically, it's going to be much more of a driver's car, I think.
Well, and I mean, let's be clear. That's the one thing that's a bit frustrating for any would-be 1M owner, is that lack of soundtrack from the E90. No matter how good the soundtrack may be, it will not be as good as the E90. There's no question about that.
Few things are, though.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. So the 1M, you know, we've just to sort of sum it up, a few other things, ordering and pricing, $47,010. We've had that on the site for a while.
I won that bet, by the way.
You did. I'm glad we didn't actually bet anything. Not that I remember, at least. One thing that has been questioned a little bit is, you know, the model year. I know, Michael, I think there's two different schools of thought. One is that all one series from March forward are 2012s, and it'll just be a 2012 until it's out of production in November. The other is that it'll be 2011 switching over to 2012.
Or there's a third school of thought that it might just stay in 11 all the way through its end.
See that, but that I don't buy that, because if you buy 135 March production, that's a 2012.
Right. I think it has more to do with the homologation of the motor and the car, and that sometimes is not in the hands of the car manufacturer.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. If I had to put money down, I would bet it's going to be 2012 until November, all the way through.
Could be.
Military production, from my understanding, will be the last month of that. I know we had a couple questions around that. The European delivery is a go. And from our understanding, based on the interview that we had last week with Matt Russell, head of BMW M in the US, we should expect the same savings that you would get on a 1 Series or M car through European delivery. And I believe that is 7%.
Yes, 7%. The trick to that is depends on how much the allocation is for European delivery. Otherwise, your dealer will have to give it up, and they're going to tell you they're not giving you 7% off.
So, yeah, I think we should probably...
That's a whole episode in and of itself.
Yeah, I was going to say, we should probably have an episode only on that at some point, because that's actually a really good point. Yeah, other than that, you know, accessories, we had talked about the graphics package. Gosh, it was like a month ago, probably. And sort of a CSL-like graphics package. You know, beyond that, and this is where it gets a little personal for me. I've looked into a few of these things, asked people at BMW about them. The BMW Performance carbon spoiler, yes, it will fit on the 1M.
Car with the CSL graphics and a big duck lip carbon fiber spoiler. Oh.
I know. Well, that's what I'm aiming for here. We'll see what happens. Short shifter, yes, it does work. It's interesting. I heard from a couple people at BMW who said, you know, wink, wink, yes, you can do it without the shift knob, because the shift knob is a polarizing piece on that in that kit. So for what it's worth. But other than that, you know, yes, you've got the BMW brakes. If you really wanted to, could you put the six-piston BMW Performance brakes? Who knows?
The six-piston brakes are crap, folks.
Yeah, I agree. I put that up there because I know that we're going to get people asking them, asking about that option. But the truth is, you're totally right. The M3 brakes are so much better on the track.
Really are. And, you know, the single piston versus multiple piston, there's all sorts of SAE journals out there that say, you know, all this stuff about surface area and all this nonsense. It's whatever really works. And the M3 brakes actually work with the right pads. So get some pads, padded yellows, go to the track, have fun.
Couldn't agree more. So the 1M, it's coming. It's available in orange, and it's going to be $47,000.
Awesome.
So moving on, and this is what I'm actually kind of excited about tonight. Let's talk about this new four-cylinder engine. We have got...
The one from Hyundai?
We have got an actual world debut tonight. BMW, well, this is, of course, you can tell we recorded this last night. BMW has released the xDrive 28i, worst name ever.
The X1 xDrive.
X1 xDrive 28i. How's that? With a four-cylinder engine. But it's the new four-cylinder twin power engine, which means it's a twin scroll engine with 245 horsepower and 258 foot-pound of torque. So it's more powerful than the previous inline six that was in that car, which of course was 230 horsepower. It's more powerful than the previous turbo 2-liter BMW engine. So in every way, this is the most impressive four-cylinder turbo-powered engine ever offered from BMW. So we should be excited, and we are excited. You know, this is an engine that is going to show up in every BMW from the 5 Series down. So let's take a step back and think about this. We talked about this weeks and even months ago. BMW is going to move their naturally aspirated inline six to the graveyard, and they're going to bring the 4-cylinder turbo to the U.S. market. And this is the 4-cylinder turbo we've talked about. So you're going to see it on the X1. You're going to see it on, of course, the next generation 1 Series as the entry-level model. We can imagine that this will be the entry-level model on the next generation 3 Series, perhaps the X3 at some point, perhaps the Z4 sooner. We've seen the rumor of this next fall. The 5 Series, absolutely, no question about it. So this is an engine that we're going to see a lot of. So with that said, Michael, let's talk about this thing. 245 horsepower. I feel good about that. BMW has a history of really solid engines, but we also know that there's a couple other 4-cylinder 2-liters that are actually getting more power.
Yeah, they're getting more power. You know, BMW has a tendency of late. This isn't in the past, but of late, of underrating their motors. So I'm thinking that this is probably going to be producing a little bit more horsepower and a little bit more torque. And they're just, you know, throwing these numbers out there arbitrarily almost sometimes, I feel like. But, yeah, I mean, Chevy's got one that's got significantly more horsepower. And like I said, the Hyundai has 274 horsepower and 269 foot-pound of torque with also using a twin-scroll turbo.
So Hyundai, and this is, of course, in the new Sonata, and Michael, you had mentioned that there's quite a few engineers from some premium automakers that were poached to help with that car and that product, that engine. It's you know, competition is good. I mean, my feeling always is competition is good. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, let's see more 4-cylinders out there that have that kind of output. Let's get BMW to really push themselves.
Yeah, I think it's great. I truly do. And, you know, I'm kind of sad to see the N52 naturally aspirated inline six leave. It's been a fantastic motor. It freely revs. It's fun when it's up at the top of its, you know, RPM range. It's a great little motor. It lacks some torque down low, which basically this new 4-cylinder is 1,250 RPMs and you've got torque.
Yeah, this... So if my favorite example of what twin scroll means, and of course that's what this is, it's a twin scroll, like the Hyundai engine. My favorite example is you drive the VW GTI with a 2-liter turbo, 200 and some odd horsepower engine, and then you drive the Mini Cooper S back to back with the 181 horsepower, 1.6-liter twin scroll turbo. The Mini will feel faster off the line, hands down. It feels like it has more power because it has more torque immediately. And in everyday driving, it's the torque that gives you that feeling of quickness off the line. And seeing that amount of torque so early on, you can't help but imagine that this engine is just going to be a little monster.
Yeah, and using the twin scroll also helps alleviate some of the turbo lag. Because basically it's two vanes in single housing, so you have consistent pulses on the charger, and so you don't really have that get up and go. You don't need these big massive turbos. So you can use two small impellers inside the same housing and get the same effect as a giant massive slow wheel, you know.
Or two turbos. I mean, you think about the N54, I mean, where you had one, you know, two turbos kind of helping each other out. This is a lighter, much like the N55, in fact, a lighter, simpler version of that. And in fact, if you look at this engine and you look at the N55, you can't help, and the N55 being the inline six twin power turbo, you can't help but think that this new 4-cylinder looks very similar to the N55.
Yeah, and they took a hacksaw and chopped off two cylinders.
I think they may have, in fact.
That's what I've got that feeling, too. But, you know, it's going to have Valvetronic, so it'll have very little valve timing. And
all well, that. it's got Valvetronic. It's got, and Vanos, in fact.
And Vanos, yes.
So, I mean, this is an engine that has every acronym that BMW could throw at it. We can only imagine fuel consumption is going to be pretty spectacular. On the EU test cycle, it's actually 7.9 liters per 100 kilometers, which is 35.7 miles per gallon imperial.
So it's roughly, I think, like 32 miles to the gallon US.
Yeah, something like that. It's about a 16% improvement over the previous engine, that being the 3-liter naturally aspirated engine that Michael just spoke about.
And these numbers are for this X1 28i xDrive only. Only comes in xDrive, so these numbers are for an all-wheel drive vehicle.
That's very true, actually. You think about the next generation 1 series, the F20, that could absolutely be 40. Better.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that getting 40 miles to the gallon.
Maybe.
With an 8-speed automatic transmission, anything is possible.
Did you hear recently that...
I don't want to talk about 9-speed transmission. It's going to leave me to drink.
You have to talk about it for 30 seconds because it is ridiculous. It's like, you know what it is? It's like the Gillette and Schtick, like razor wars. I mean, listen, I love new advances in technology. I love it. But I've got to say, 6-speed feels really good in my car right now. Now, granted, it's a manual transmission, but an 8-speed automatic is already like, what? I mean, really? It's just like shifting constantly, right? 9-speeds, what? Are you serious? There's got to be a law of diminishing returns.
Well, and that's the funniest part, because it's a ZF transmission, this 9-speed crap box. But ZF had... you know, gone off the deep end and said that the 8-speed was going to be their final transmission because the, like you said, the diminishing returns, it makes no sense to add another gear and all this other stuff and blah, 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 blah. 8-speed's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Well, bread in general, not even just sliced bread, you know, the 8-speed transmission is better than bread. And then they come out with a 9-speed transmission and it's now 0.0001% more efficient. Okay, thanks. And it's going to cost like more money too, so it makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I'm sure Mercedes is going to buy, 200,000 of them, and then BMW is going to go do something.
BMW is going to have to use one of the gearless transmissions, like zero shift or.
Well, and we've talked about that for quite a while now. I mean,
they had some things running around out there with Toro Track or whatever it was. The problem is noise and heat. They generate too much noise, make way too much heat. So
well, so did the internal combustion engine about 100 years ago.
Right. So we'll see. I personally just think we're going to have these little 3-cylinder diesel motors powering a generator and power the electric propulsion systems. But that's another day.
I actually think we're going back to the horse.
Sweet. I'd be all for that.
That's why I'm going to buy a 1M and hold on to it.
Your next vehicle. I mean, how great is that?
Yeah, it's definitely true. Let's see. So we've got Detroit covered. We've got the new 4-cylinder covered. Anything else? Alpina. We wanted to talk about Alpina.
I love Alpina, Gabe.
I do too. I've got to be really honest with you. I am in love with the mindset and the engineering of those people.
I think they're a bunch of crazy loons because they take a luxury, and I'm going to say luxury. I don't consider BMW outside the 7 Series as luxury. It's more of a premium. And Alpina takes it to like this luxury level with like finer materials and better wood. And basically everything seems like a step up over a standard BMW. And then they give it the performance of almost an M. So it's just ridiculous to me.
Well, and you know, we've talked about it in the past. We had sort of a pseudo Alpina show last year when the B7 was released. But anybody who can make a 21-inch wheel, I mean, what was it, 18 pounds, 19 pounds?
Yeah, ridiculous.
Unbelievable. Of course, the air nozzle, the little... The valve stem is actually integrated into the center of the wheel to create, to make sure that the mass of that little tiny thing is held closer to the hub.
It's over-engineering at its finest.
So that means you need less weight on the wheel, which means you need less weight in general. It's, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's incredible.
I would personally love to see a Alpina 5 series here, as well as a Alpina, say, 3 series. I would just be ecstatic over that. Well, I actually think I would buy an Alpina 3 series.
The D3 is the one that, and Matt Russell mentioned it in our interview, who, of course, is heading the Alpina brand in the U.S. The D3 is the one that people cannot get enough of in Europe and the U.K. You know, it's this diesel 3 series that has won award after award. It's been on the market for a while now, and after Matt mentioned it, I looked into it. I mean, that car is absolutely incredible. It actually makes BMW's diesels kind of makes them look bad.
Little wimpy. You know, and on the D3, Gabe, I usually hate pinstripes, but for that car, I'm okay with it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because it deserves them. I mean, that is the look. You know, that is the Alpina look. But it's really incredible. I mean, you're talking about an inline four-cylinder turbo diesel with 197 bhp and get ready for it, 302 foot-pound of torque at 2000 rpm. This is a
with a 6-speed, right?
That is a turbo diesel, four-cylinder turbo diesel. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
I mean, that is incredible.
Well, and it's got to get some decent fuel economy. Could you imagine that?
Oh, yeah. It's going to get great fuel economy. Of course, it's got a narrow power band. In the UK, the MPG is 48 miles per gallon combined. I imagine that's probably high 30s in the US, but still pretty incredible.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I could see, you know, I mean, ideally what I would love to see as an enthusiast is that M goes back to motorsport, gets rid of some of this luxury nonsense and posh interior stuff and kind of goes a little bit more Spartan. I'm not going to say, you know, cloth, but obviously it deserves leather because it's a BMW. But I would like to see maybe Alpina come in and kind of pick up where M was kind of heading.
Well, and I think that's actually pretty interesting because Alpina, that's their natural sort of breeding ground, is the kind of luxury sport that the U.S. market seems to want so badly. I think the key is for Alpina to build its brand in the U.S. I mean, that's not a shock. There's no rocket science there. That is the key with the U.S. market so sort of in need of a, you know, panache when they buy a car, a $60,000 3 Series. They want to have a label that is recognized, and Alpina needs to be recognized, and they need to get their name out there.
Couldn't agree more. Hoping that happens, because I'd like to see more 1Ms.
Absolutely. This is true. Well, on that note, Michael, I think we have wrapped up Bimmercast number 42.
42 in the books.
If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, click over to bimmerfile.com and click on the contact link. You can send us an email. It gets to both of us. You can tell us how ignorant we are, how intelligent we are, or how unattractive our voices sound. We're happy to hear all of it. And, of course, ideas for shows in the future, we're always, always, always ready to hear those. Anything else, send them over. And iTunes, don't forget to go vote on the show. We love the 5 stars, but of course we'll take anything that you feel is an honest vote. And yeah, that's about it. We'll of course be back next week with more show. We've got lots coming up, including the X6 refresh that nobody's talking about, the new Mega City vehicle, the new, of course, Geneva is going to be a big show. So much to talk about, almost don't even know where to start. So, with that said, this is Gabe. Cheers.
Michael Prost.